Welcome back. This is the Prepared Mindset Podcast. I'm your host, Austin. Happy to have all of you in with us for another discussion this week. If you're joining us for the very first time, awesome. Super cool to have you guys here. And if you're a return listener, appreciate you guys for, hopefully, subscribing and showing up every week to check out these episodes. If you guys are listening to this and I guess if you actually remember at the end of the recording here that you really enjoyed the podcast, please consider hitting the subscribe button. Please consider sharing with a friend, right? Because those numbers, those metrics, the subscribers and the listens and all that good stuff, right? That really, really helps keep this podcast going on a week-to-week basis. The mission here, the goal here really has always just been to spread the message and share the information. You know, this isn't like some of the other, Brovet podcasts that are out there. I'm not trying to throw shade. I don't know how to describe some of the other existing podcasters in the space other than to use that title, right? Guys that have served and they share a lot of stories and stuff. And it's cool. I have a lot of respect for them. I personally, and I say this all the time because I think it needs to be said, anything it needs to be said over and over, right? I never served. I was never law enforcement, right? Just a civilian who has a desire to learn more, enjoys the conversations, really, really enjoy the company of great people. So I do this week to week. You know, we have weekly discussions that we release here. Monthly, you'll get a sit rep, sometimes more often if something crazy happens, God forbid. And then also we have a YouTube channel, we have an Instagram, we have a Patreon page too, patreon.com/prepared_mindset_pod. If you're looking for a way to support Prepared Mindset and help us grow, that's probably one of the best ways you can do it. We also have a Spreadshirt if you want to go pick up a shirt or a hat or something like that. That's all in the link tree on our Instagram page. You can go find us on Instagram. And we have a YouTube, you know, so if you want to see some of the long form content we have with a visual package, paired with it, head on over to YouTube, Prepared Mindset, on there, lots of videos releasing. Like it was every week for a while, probably with the holidays and work and everything, like, you know, it's a little bit more like every other week, but dropping stuff as often as we can to try and make sure that what I've been able to learn, what I know, I'm able to get out there in meaningful and helpful ways to try and help all of you. And speaking of helping, we get help, right? This is a sponsored podcast. Yes, I know somebody like me has sponsors. It's absolutely crazy, but I do. I work with some really awesome companies in the space that provide some awesome goods and services and support to all of you out there in listener land, all of you guys that are consumers. So I want to take a moment here and say thank you to them and direct you to them if you're looking to get into some gear. And it starts, of course, with Custom Night Vision, you guys. CustomNightVision.com. That's their website. And if you're looking to explore your options, right? Maybe you're somebody like many of us at some point, or maybe you're still there, that doesn't know if you can afford night vision. You don't know what the options are. You don't know what's available. You don't know what's good, bad, this, that, or the other thing, right? Head on over to CustomNightVision.com. That's the website, and look at everything they have available there, right? They have on the homepage two big blue buttons. You can't miss them, a monocular builder and a binocular builder tool. So if you don't even know which way is up and you want to figure out where to start building a budget, go through and play around. You can build out your own custom PVS-14 device, which is basically the legacy, like the most commonly used night vision device in the world, right? Because of its durability, its reliability, the features it brings. And I started with one. They're absolutely fantastic. You can choose the optics you want. You can choose the intensifier tube. And then if you don't want a PVS-14, maybe you want something a little bit different. They have options like the Tanto from Nocturne Industries. They have the ruggedized PVS-14 device that's now out on the market, I should say. The MH-14 from Lloyd Innovations. Tons of different varieties available. Or if you want to go and build out a binocular set, right? You've been saving for a while. You want to get into some duals and you're not exactly sure what, go check out the binocular builder so that you can put together your dream set of night vision. And if you have questions on all of this stuff, use the chat function, you guys. Again, CustomNightVision.com. It's in the lower right-hand corner of the website. You can reach out and talk to one of the team members there, and they're happy to give you guys the direction, the advice, their feelings on certain housings, and answer all of your questions. So you know, is green better than white? Is green really going to hold you back? Is Photonis better than Elbit? Any of that kind of stuff, right? head on over to the website, reach out to the team. They're there to support you and pick up some fantastic gear for yourself. Night Vision is awesome, you guys. It's so much fun to have and share with your friends. Again, it's customnightvision.com. Go check it out for yourselves today. Also, want to say thank you to the team at Harrington Arms, you guys. Their website is harringtonarms.com. Jake, the whole team over there, right? Fantastic dudes making some fantastic products. Jake's been on the podcast a number of times, does some great work, I think, with the content and things over there. And they make some absolutely outstanding compensators. They just sent me their, I think it's the HC95 is the model. But their V2, who has almost an additional 10% recoil reduction, bringing it to something like 30 or 35%, something completely wicked in terms of taking the recoil on your handgun and reducing it. Because why would we not want to make the shooting experience better? Why would we not want to mitigate recoil in any way that we can, of course, without impacting reliability of the platform? And that's really what Harrington does. They make a bunch of great compensators. They make magwells, magazine extensions, and they have their hacker system coming out later this year, which is their proprietary barrel and compensator system that really operates off of a QD or quick disconnect function. So you don't need to mess with wrenches. You don't need to mess with Loctite. Really, really cool stuff. You guys head on over to harringtonarms.com. Check all of that out for yourselves today. So shout out to those folks for their support, helping us make it happen here. You know, every week, like I said, we're dropping episodes every week, sit reps every month, and YouTube videos every week or every 2 weeks. You know, we're making it happen here and hope you guys are enjoying it. But this week, my guest for discussion is Brandon, who was on, I think I looked earlier, it was either four, I think it was 4 weeks ago. So Brandon was on about a month ago, we'll just say it was a month, right, with Jeremiah from Teardown Systems, right? And Brandon, you guys know him from a lot of the T-Rex Arms videos and content. I reached out after we sat down and had that discussion, which was, it was powerful, man. It really was. I think if you guys are looking for a good listen, back this up a couple weeks, 5 or 6 weeks, something like that, right? Talking about the Kirk assassination, talking about faith, talking about, you know, kind of where we go from here. It was fantastic to get his insight and of course Jeremiah's, but wanted to sit down with Brandon, talk about who he is, what he's done. Obviously he does a lot of shooting, a lot of training with the tactical games is something that he does a lot of a work and effort go into that for him. And then obviously, yeah, his work with TRX Arms, you know, content creation, gear testing. He spent time in the Marines, right? He's got a lot of stuff to share, right? So it should be a really, really cool conversation. Somebody that I've, you know, looked more and more at the work that he's done and the content that he's helped to create, and the more importantly, right, which is like harking back to the here's a term you guys will love, this a thematic goal, like the theme and goal, the thematic goal of Prepared Mindset, which is to bring knowledge forward to all of you. So as I learn, you learn along with me. I'm a very simple man with a very smooth brain that just has a lot of excitement and passion for all this kind of stuff and a desire to help share it. You know, if I can make this more understandable and more digestible and more approachable for all of you out there, I think as a community, then it's better, right? We're all able to grow together. We're all able to be more, you know, more competent, more dangerous, you know, really, as a community, as a citizenry right here in the United States of America, and certainly in, you know, some other countries around the world. It's always really cool for me when I get to check out the listener map and see, hey, what continents, what country, you know, is my message reaching? Very, very cool stuff to see. But at any rate, getting back to the guest this week, Brandon, and I'm probably going to butcher his last name. Actually, I think in the last one, I just called him Brandon Wombat because that's what's in his Instagram name. And I'm sure a lot of people have just butchered. I think it's Wamba, something like that. Yeah. I'm going to apologize in advance, like I do with so many of my guests when they have names or last names that I struggle with because, I'm not a linguist. It is not my forte. But I do know Brandon is a man of faith, former MARSOC, if I remember correctly. I believe he was a radio guy. So maybe we'll get into some of that. who's to know. I really want to talk a lot about shooting because I think, you know, with some of the content he's put out recently around pressure pad placement and laser devices and the amount of shooting and training I'm trying to do right now personally to advance my own skill set with night vision, thanks to the folks over at Custom Night Vision. I think maybe we'll get into some of that stuff, but it should be a really, really cool discussion. Looking forward to it for sure. So with that, folks, I'll shut the hell up and get on over to this week's discussion with Brandon. Here we go. Brandon, welcome back, man. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, man?
Good, dude. I'm happy to be able to sit back down. I know the last time we talked, it was a little bit of a heavier conversation, talking about what had happened with Charlie Kirk and everything, but wanted to get some time to talk with you, hear about your background and talk some training and stuff. So happy that we were able to make the time work. I know you've got a bunch of stuff going on with your day job. I don't have kids, but I've been told that they take up a lot of time. And I think you just had like another one and stuff. So, you know, all kinds of good things. Super blessed that we found the time. So thrilled to have you back, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Yeah, life's a little crazy right now. New responsibilities at work with just the ramping up of Black Friday. I have a 2-week-old daughter and a 2-year-old toddler. That's a beautiful combination. That's one way to explain it. Yeah, time's a little limited, but you know, just teaches you to be a little bit more intentional about your time management.
Yeah, I love that when people, because we talk about in this community all the time, and it could be anything. Usually it's, at least what I've seen, is like fitness and stuff. And I have a lot of work to do myself, but when I talk to people about this and like, hey, try to set a schedule, try to be accountable with your partner, right? Like, hey, if you guys don't have a home gym, go to a gym, stick to a schedule, hold each other accountable. My favorite is when people say, I just need to find the time to go to the gym. It's like, no, you have the time. We all have the exact same amount of time in a day. That's how time works. You just aren't prioritizing that over other things. And trying to be too judgmental, because again, like, I don't have kids, so for people that do, it's probably a very different conversation. But I hate it when people throw that around. It's like, no, man, we all have the same amount of time. You just need to be better at managing it.
There's always a ton of factors that go into it. I mean, it's like, for me, I have a very flexible work schedule. I have a stay-at-home wife. I have, you know, multiple incomes that make my schedule so flexible. And I have a home gym. So for me personally, like, I was talking to my wife about it last week. I was like, man, I don't know how doable going to the gym would be daily right now with like the transition to having a family of four and things like that. But to that point, yeah, everyone has the same amount of time in a day. And I've definitely been in a work environment where I didn't have that flexible schedule, but I still had to train to keep myself in shape for that job and had to find the time. It's a lot of times people don't want to sacrifice hobbies. They don't want to sacrifice their doom scrolling. They don't want to sacrifice other things. Like, sometimes you have to sacrifice a little bit of sleep or even get really creative with your sleep schedule. So it's like right now, my schedule, for example, I'm working from home on Wednesdays to help combat that awkward sleep schedule with a newborn. So it's like, hey, I can't go 7 days in a row of interrupted sleep. I can do two. So I'll just work from home, get a little extra sleep. That way I can train in the afternoon, still get my work done and things like that. It's just, you got to get creative. But as long as you have that intentionality and you have that goal and you actually care about it, you will find ways to do it.
Yeah, that's, I used to run into that a lot with people and like dry fire, specifically friends that would want to get into shooting, or they were already shooting. They didn't know how to get better, you know, and you, as friends, you try to help people where you can, like, hey, have you tried dry fire? Hey, how often do you do it? Because I don't know what your budget is for training ammo. I don't know what your time budget is for making the trip out to the range, you know, that kind of thing. Like, hey, have you tried dry fire? Like, oh, yeah, I just don't have time to do it. I can get maybe 10 minutes in every week or something. It's like, no, dude, you can get in more than 10 minutes. And the beautiful part, like you said, hey, maybe give up a little bit of sleep. The great part about dry fire is it's pretty quiet, save for if you're using a shot timer. And even then, you just tape over that thing till it's quiet. And you can carve out 30 minutes a night, 20 minutes a night. Even if it's 10 minutes a day, your lunch break or something, like, you can make it happen if you want it bad enough. And it comes down to desire a lot of the times, really, like how important is whether it's fitness, dry fire, anything, how important is that thing really, if we're being honest with ourselves, you know?
Yeah, That's ultimately what it always comes down to, is how important is it? I mean, like one example I can speak to recently is I'm applying for my master's in theological studies starting in June, and that's in preparation to go to get my master's in divinity, which is a basically seminary. But that master's in divinity is an Ivy League program. That's to give you an idea, I think it's, if I remember correctly, 111 credit hours for that program. The master's, or the MATS, Master's in Theological Studies, is only 36 credit hours. So both masters, one's almost four times as long.
Yeah.
That MDiv, that Master's in Divinity, is an average of 400 pages of reading a week. So
Ooh.
that's a tremendous amount of reading. That's a ton. So as I was getting ready for that, I was like, you know what? I've been in this book for quite a while, kind of intimidated by how long the book I was reading was. And I was like, you know what? Let's just see if I can actually do the reading that's required in the program that I'm trying to get to. And I did it. I read the almost 1,000-page book in 2 weeks. But it required intentionality. It's like, you know what, this is a priority. I need to actually find the time to do it instead of, you know, pulling out my phone when I have 5 minutes. Let's read a page or two. It's things like that. Same thing with other people's, like, I don't have time to dry fire. But instead of, again, pulling out your phone to scroll, draw your gun from your holster, clear it first, probably, or really test your trigger control and don't clear it. But don't
Oh
recommend
God,
that, by
please
the way.
don't.
But
Anybody listening, please do not do that. There's gonna be somebody out there who's gonna be like, I'll go ahead and try. And please don't, for the love of God. Nobody needs an
please.
ND.
Intentionality, that's what it comes down to.
And that's, I mean, and it really needs to be more of a thing, especially with, we see people that, and I'm not trying to cast judgment or throw shade. People say, because and in all walks of life, right? I want to be better at this. I want to be good at shooting. I want to learn how to do structure clearance work. I want to learn radios and comm stuff. Like, I mean, anything. We're talking in the scope of our discussion, but I mean, very much it's a trait and characteristic of successful people that will prioritize the time and find it. For you personally, I know you, how long were you in the Marines, when you were, active duty, where you're training every day, you're working on these things. Like, how long was that for you?
So I was in for 9 years, but the last year I was in Wounded Warrior Battalion. So you can basically say 8 years of working and training.
So, and that's daily, right? So you're either physically, you're PTing, you're working out every day, you're hitting the range, because you were, if I'm remembering this correctly, you were in MARSOC. Okay. So then I'm going to say, correct me if I'm wrong, but a slightly more elevated training regiment than maybe I think it's a 0311. Is that Marine Corps just inf I'm going to say just infantry. I shouldn't say just, but it's the infantry.
Just to preface a little bit, explaining what my job was in MARSOC. So there's Marine Special Operations Command, if you're unfamiliar. There's multiple MOSs or jobs within MARSOC. There is O372, which is Critical Skills Operator. O370 was a Special Operations Officer, same job just as an officer. And then there's 8071s, which are Special Operations Capability Specialists, and that includes EOD techs, communicators, dog handlers. Sarks, or I don't think Sarks technically have the MOS, but they kind of fall under there. Intel guys, things like that. So I was an 8071. So training did look a little bit different. There was still they call it a screener. It's just another word for assessment and selection. There's just different rules that apply when they define it that way, basically. And then there's a pipeline, just like, you know, everyone else in special operations. But the training difference, I would say, from conventional to special operations, is the variety of training that you get is much different in the soft side. So what I mean by that is, before you deploy, on both sides, there's always the regular training, the routine pre-deployment exercises and things like that that you're always going to experience. But when you're not getting ready for deployments, generally, this is generally speaking, this isn't always the case. So please forgive me if you're an infantry guy listening to this and this is not apply to you. But generally speaking, you're going to go through routine company or battalion level exercises that is considered your training that just hardens or shapes your current skill set. And soft, that time is going to be getting different skills. So you're continuously expanding your skill set versus shaping or honing your individual skills that you currently have. So I would say, like, for Marine infantry specifically, they train all the time. That's their job, is training. If they're not training, they're like playing cards in the barracks. Special operations is the same thing. It's just we're going to schools more or less training. It's a little bit different. So I don't know if that answered your question.
Yeah, I mean it's the same vein, right? Like you are constantly working on that skill set, or you're expanding your range of skill sets. You're not stagnant. There's no sitting around doing, I don't even know what you would do. I know there's certain branches of the military that probably do more sitting around than others. At least that's what I've been told. I have a couple of family members that may or may not be in those branches, and I'm certainly not trying to offend anyone, but they call the chair force for a reason, and I mean, it is what it is. So, with a lot of that, like to get to that level of proficiency, whether it could be anything, right? Shooting, for one, right? That's something that doesn't just happen, and it's something I think people get discouraged when they pick up a gun the first couple times, right? And they, especially handguns, right? And hey, I suck. Hey, I can't hit this. Hey, why is it low and left? And they don't understand, and it's discouraging. They don't come back to it. There's a lot of time that has to go into it. At least if you're not gonna go spend the money to get, say, supervised training or instruction, right? Something structured to help build you up, and then understand like the minutia behind it, why you're having success or why you're not, like understanding the mechanics of shooting everything. Is that something that you picked up from your time in the military, or is that something like, as because you shoot a lot on your own now that you're out? I know you do tactical game stuff. Obviously, the content creation you do with T-Rex, there's a little bit of shooting, pulled into all that stuff. So, how did that come together for you in terms of like going from, I don't want to say just another shooter to where you're at today, where I would say, you don't have to say this, but I would say you're probably more proficient than many of the folks out there.
So it actually started with me being fat in school. I know that's going to sound interesting, but
What the fuck?
So I wanted to okay, so I guess another step back. I moved to Philadelphia. My family's from Philadelphia. I was born in Tennessee while they were on business. Ended up going back to Philadelphia. Went to the same school my parents did, or my dad did. So pretty much claimed Philadelphia, and that's why I say I'm from Philly. Whole family's from there. But anyways, we moved back primarily for me to play ice hockey. So things were looking really good here. The opportunities weren't very great. So I went back to Philadelphia to play hockey to get
Ugh,
some
be a
junior hockey
freaking
opportunities.
Penguins fan.
No, I'm a Flyers fan, so Philadelphia side, not
Oh,
Pittsburgh. But my
I'm
wife's from
sorry, that
Buffalo,
is
so now
fine.
I'm a now I'm a Sabres fan.
It's not
But
better. It's fine. It's neither are better. I mean, I'm a huge Wings fan, so neither would be better for me.
that makes sense. But yeah, so started playing hockey there. It was very expensive, and in fact, the opportunities weren't greater because we just didn't have a lot of income. So, your opportunities on the hockey side of things is very much dependent on income. So, long story short, realized I wasn't going to the NHL and wanted to figure out what I was going to do with my life. That was very much against anything like academic wise. I didn't really have an interest in anything like that required the brain. Essentially, I wanted to very much work with my hands. So, when I was 15, I decided to join the Marine Corps, but I was very fat and out of shape. Like I had some work to do, and went to the Marine Corps recruiting office where I believe I was 16 when I went for the first time. I could have been 15, I don't remember. And I just saw the PULE program. So it's a program of people that have enlisted that are waiting to go to boot camp, and once a week they would gather to work out, basically to better prepare themselves for boot camp, or to test themselves to see if they're ready. And I realized how far behind of like just being a capable human being I was, like from not being able to do a pull-up to having a large body fat percentage to not even be able to run a quarter mile straight, all of these things. So where like the desire to improve came from was from that. I wasn't told how to get in better shape. I figured it out by watching videos online, and I started with just some body weight stuff, some bar calisthenics. Basically focus on what I needed to be good at. So that's a pretty important principle. So I needed to be good at passing the Marine Corps IST. So that's the initial strength test. That's half of a Marine Corps physical fitness test. That's what gets you into boot camp. And in order to do that, I need to be good at pull-ups. I need to be good at crunches. And I need to be a good runner. So I worked on things to improve that. Now, today, that same principle applies. It's like, what do I need to be good at? And for me, what I need to be good at chiefly is leading my family to Christ. So that has shaped a lot of the direction of my training and why I train for what I do. And I also need to be good at my job. So, training, like if I know I need to be good at this thing, if my job depends on me being a good shooter, I need to train to be a better shooter, especially with me competing and representing the company in live events. Like, hey, I need to be good at this thing to represent the company well. So, yeah, there are generally two types of people in this sense, and this is again generically speaking. This isn't a blanket statement. There are people who need to receive instruction to be told how to do things, or there's people who go out and find that. And sometimes some people are both of those things. It's just they will figure out what they need to be good at for things they care about, and other things they recognize like, hey, this is something that is probably important. I just don't really have a lot of care for it, so I'm going to go get instruction because I just don't have the capacity or the interest to self-study it, right? We all have those areas. But for me, fitness and then the shooting and now some of the other studies I do is very much dependent on what I see or what I believe is the most important things in my life.
Yeah, it's got to be, I think, in any realm that you see people excel in, that's not to say you won't have an interest in other areas, right? It's a personal decision. Like, I'm
Yeah,
going to figure it
exactly.
out there. I'm going to get somebody to tell me how to get there because I have exhausted other means, or a lot of folks, like, you'll go figure it out yourself. And to your point with like the videos and stuff, I mean, we live in 2025. You'd be pretty hard pressed to find a subject you can't teach yourself quite a bit about just by YouTube alone. Like, it's incredible. I actually wish YouTube was more developed when I was getting my first couple cars, because then I would have been able to do a lot more and my life would have sucked a lot less at certain times, because some of that stuff, it's just like, now you can find anything on YouTube. But then I was driving like crappy Hondas, and I had a Saturn SL2 that was definitely the worst vehicle I ever owned, and like, just all the stuff I had to do with that, had to either figure it out or ask for help or pay somebody, and it's just miserable, miserable experiences. But sometimes I think that God tests you with some of that stuff too, and you're just better for it, and you should go through a certain amount of, I don't want to say suffering, because that's not really suffering, that's just like a difficulty,
Yeah, it's a refining process.
But in terms of like, shooting and stuff like that, I mean, I'm actually just surprised more often than not how many people are just afraid to go do it, or maybe not afraid. They are hesitant to go spend the time, spend the ammo, invest in some trial and error, see themselves fail a little bit before they expect to see themselves start to succeed, right? Whether it's a flat range or anything else. Especially with a handgun, but with a rifle, with anything, there's just, it's a very foreign concept. It's not like something that we've been taught to do all our lives. Unless maybe you were, I know some people were raised that way. They're usually not good shooters though. Like, oh, I've been shooting since I was 4 years old. And then most of the time they suck. They shoot like a 4 year old. It's pretty funny to me. but with a lot of those skills, right, with skill development and things like that, what are some of the things that you find yourself working on the most to, I mean, keep things, I guess, running smoothly, right? To your point, you represent a company at a lot of different levels. It'd be really embarrassing to show up on a video or something and get beat by a bunch of like customer service folks that can't shoot or anything like that, right?
That honestly, like since taking over, like becoming, like since I started shooting on camera, the time to train has dropped significantly because now the time that I'm spending on the range is for marketing material. It's not for training, right? So it's trying to blend the two, trying to make the most of both opportunities. Before, when I was in T&E and I wasn't really on camera, when I had to test things for whatever the case may be, whether it was an optic or a rifle, I would test them while training. So I actually got like dedicated training and I improved my shooting dramatically through that. Since I've been on camera, my shooting hasn't improved all that much, but I have focused it specifically for the sport that I compete in, which is a tactical game. So basically my goal there is to be on a practical shooting side with like USPSA to be top 25%, which is basically low A class shooter, which I believe that's a good representation of my skill level on a good day. And then also And the same thing will apply over to rifle. So just being a good positional, practical carbine shooter that's not just 50 meters and then that's 100 meters, that's 600 meters. So the things that I work on, I don't really dry fire all that often because of time. Again, we have to think about what is most valuable for us, in our current life situation, right? Everyone is different. For example, I know a lot of people who don't care about fitness because it just doesn't really apply to their lives. So maybe they're just staying in shape by eating healthy, they're going on walks and things like that. Totally fine. I absolutely get it. For me, I have a high level fitness expectation, so that is a priority. For me, studying theology at the rate I'm doing in preparation for school is a priority for mine. Being a GM shooter for me is not a priority. I don't need that skill, so I'm not training for that. I'm trying to maintain, slightly improve at where I'm at. Because at the end of the day, as a brand representative for what I do at work, I need to show competency on camera. I don't need to show that I'm the best. The point of the content that we make is not to prove that I'm a good shooter. It's to market material, market ideas, market our products. So it's kind of complicated. And actually, fairly recently, with getting ready to go to Tactical Games National Championships, it's been like actually considering like is it the best use of my time and resources to go to that event? I know I'm not going to win. If I place top 10 in the nation, I would be thrilled. I think if I, performed at my best capability, everything went right, that's where about where I would be. But is that worth it, right? Or should I spend more time, developing things in the company that need to be done in the role that I'm in? So it's, yeah, I don't know if I answered that question for you, but it's a
Well,
lot of
no, it's
considerations.
yeah, I mean, you look at it and it's prioritization of, what's going to be best for you and, or what's going to be best for you and your family or, whatever that is best for is for whoever is listening to this and thinks about that, themselves, whether they're single or they're married or they have a family or maybe in terms of like, hey, you have a group of friends you go train with and you want to be as helpful as you can. Maybe that means, hey, you spend less time working on, I don't know, one skill to focus on stuff like honestly I would say if look to anybody and I've said this before on the pod and I'll say it again here if you want to be universally accepted and adopted by a training group of your peers learn radios and comms because nobody wants to learn it and if you can do it you're like a unicorn and people will capture you and try and replicate you because it's very difficult so if you're looking for a golden ticket like there it is man like that's it's not even a
That's how
secret
you get
people beg
press.
for that shit like
Yeah.
nobody wants to do it and that includes me like I have my ham radio license I can count on one hand the number of times I've used it and it's just not for me and I was always good at science and like radio waves and propagation and all that stuff like I get it I can be borderline functional is where I leave my skill set. I'm not going to go look into, we have somebody else that started hanging out with us. Super smart guy, set up like a VPN on all of our phones, set up ATAX. So we could do stuff. He was trying to get us into mesh and everything. And then stuff kind of slowed down. It's like, no, we need to keep doing this. 'Cause he actually knows what the hell we're doing here. This is the important stuff, but I wouldn't for me, because it's not my passion. It's not where I want to see myself grow and develop. I don't put time into it. It's not that it's not valuable. I just don't do it.
You bring up a really good point here, and it has to deal with not being selfish, actually, is what it's rooted in. So what people generally tend to do is they generally, sorry, I shouldn't say generally because this maybe not apply to everyone, but what a lot of people do, I'm basically saying the same thing. You know what? Forgive me if this doesn't apply to you. But you see people, they focus a lot of time and effort and they hyper-focus on things that they want, like they themselves that will benefit them. And this is what I see a lot in the high skill level niche areas of shooting, right? We see people that get to these very high levels of shooting. Great. That's awesome. And I don't want to, it sounds like you're being jealous because, they're a better shooter than you. I just would also like to encourage people who are chasing that, not necessarily people that are already there, but people that are chasing that, like, hey, is this something that I need? And I've heard multiple people at that level say, like, hey, this is not a skill set that or a skill level that a lot of people need. Like if you're going to teach this stuff and show that you're credible and speaking on this, you probably do need to be here. And so those are, that's your job is to get to that level. I get that. But there's so many people that are chasing this thing because it's what they want. It's not what, for example, their family needs or your team needs. So in the point that you're bringing up, It's like, if you want to be an asset in your team, learn a skill that no one else is willing or wanting to learn. This is something that I did when I was on the teams in MARSOC. When we were going on deployments, I recognized the type of warfare that was being conducted, and I realized no one wanted to be a drone operator. That was the main effort on both my deployments. So when I learned to do this thing, I learned how to fly all of the small unmanned aerial system units that the team had. I didn't have to rely on anyone else to help me do that. I went on every single op and I was killing the most people. So, in a sense, I was still doing it for myself at the time. But what I was looking for is like, hey, this isn't the most glorifying skill. People are going to think I'm a nerd. I'm the comm guy who flies drones and things like that. I went to motorman school. I could go to do other things to make myself look cooler, but I recognized a hole in the team, a skill that no one wanted, and it ended up making me one of the most valuable assets on the team, specifically on my second deployment. So that principle of not looking for things that you want to do, but things that either your family or your team needs is vitally important, because sometimes it is something that you don't want to do. But guess what? Life isn't about you, right? It's just not. And that's honestly probably, if you think about it, going to be the most important things you can learn.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, everybody wants to know how to use drones because apparently that's how the next war is going to be fought based off of all the videos that get shared on Instagram. Like, you were just ahead of the curve. That's all. You just got to the game early. And now you got a head start if you wanted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting, like to a brief tangent on that, because what drones are supposed to do is it's not really like represented well on social media. So you're seeing a lot of like POV quadcopter type stuff on with like the Ukraine war and stuff. But drones are supposed to be long range surveillance items, right? So you're supposed to be able to see people without them knowing that you're seeing them. Quadcopters and these POV drones are extremely loud. Like you hear them, and if they have to be so close to you in order for their cameras to be effective. And I know there's some very rare quadcopters out there that have some very long range cameras, but they're not high altitude fixed wing aircraft that are intended for reconnaissance. So what I mean by that is they're not effective reconnaissance tools. It's like saying, this may not be the best analogy, but it's like saying I have a CQB rifle, but I have a 24 inch barrel on my gun, right? It can do the job, but it's not very effective. Okay. Effective reconnaissance tools or fixed wing aircraft that can be flown at levels with a long range visual capability that cannot be detected easily. So we're seeing all these people like, oh, I need to learn how to fly a drone. It's not proper usage of reconnaissance tools. You're going to see people be able to counter those a lot easier. If you have to fly a quadcopter to be able to see someone, you're very close to them. And the chances of you being found because that you're using that equipment is much higher than using proper reconnaissance equipment, which is not available to civilians right now. Now we're seeing it
I
because
was going to
it's
ask,
cheap
yeah,
and easy to get
can we
to.
even get it? Yeah.
I mean, you can. It's just you're paying well over six figures for a single aircraft unit that is intended to be expendable. So it is very much military capability in that sense. For example, we had a camera on one of the planes that I would fly. So we were able to fly around 800 to 1200 feet above ground to be able to identify people. We got a new camera where we were able to fly 4,000 feet above ground and be able to identify what type of gun someone was carrying. That camera was a six-figure camera. It wasn't even considering the rest of the aircraft. So that's how expensive that capability is. But that's what it takes. Like quadcopters just aren't very good at what they do unless you are rigging them up to be some sort of explosive. Like they're pretty good at that. But even then, I was flying kamikaze drones that had a 40-kilometer. Or technically, it was only 10 kilometer. We did get some out to 40 kilometers with some pretty crazy antenna stuff. But yeah, that capability is much more significant than like, hey, I need to be within 400 meters of you to get an effective, drone strike. It's extremely near peer.
Do you see that kind of stuff? Like, so comparing your experience, like you just said, like what you did with drones when you were in the military, right? Versus what you observe probably in our community now. I mean, how, I don't even know what other word to use. How much do civilians bastardize stuff that they see from the military just based off of snippets on social media? Because I feel like we see stuff Like the drone thing is a huge, that's a huge example of it, right? But then you also see stuff like, oh yeah, hey, I, you know, we clone guns because of what we saw, you know, MARSOC or JSOC or whoever run the Mark 18 is the best rifle ever dreamt of because, you know, and yeah, people would stacked a lot of bodies with that weapon system, right? Is it the best? No, probably for some things, I'm sure it's pretty great. You know, how often do you see that where you like you'll see something becomes trendy and you're like, this is not even what this is fucking for? And you know, like back in my day, we didn't do it or whatever the response is. But is that do you find yourself making that kind of a connection, looking at stuff, going, you guys got it completely wrong here?
It happens pretty often. It happens not just with equipment, but with ideas and training, which I think we should talk about a little bit too. But what you see is it's just a different of perception, right? So on the civilian side, I'm talking about people who don't have, you know, military experience, and they get into shooting, they get into the practical shooting side of things, and they become very, very good shooters, right? And then they have different gear considerations considering what perception they have on shooting, right? So you see people just a very rudimentary. That's not the right word. A very basic analogy here is large window pistol optics versus enclosed pistol optics. Well, if you're competition shooting, that is, you know, the only consideration you have is I want a very big window that I can easily find a dot if I don't have a perfect index, right?
Sure.
The other side of things is like that's not more important to me. I more or less want something that I know is not going to break, right? So I want maybe something like an enclosed emitter pistol optic, right? So that's one very basic example. And if speaking to like other pieces of equipment like the drones, yeah, that's a big one. Like I'm planning a video for like the complete buyer's guide for the prepared citizen. I don't even have a drone on there. And someone who's 80% of my job downrange on both my deployments had to deal with that, you know, using drones, and I know how effective they can be based on what's available. You know, I could be wrong. I'm wrong a lot of times, but I just yeah, it's not. I'm trying to think of a good analogy for it. It's just what civilians are trying to use them for. Like you're trying to replace, you know, fixed wing aircraft with quadcopters. It's just not possible. It's not even worth the time or effort. It's not worth me carrying it around. I mean, there is a time and place for things like that. I have gotten strikes off with small quadcopters, but they were still flying out 2,000 kilometers from me. They were still much more significantly capable than what you currently see. So. It happens all the time. And I honestly just see think comes down to just a perception issue. It's just like, hey, and this happens with training too, right? So you see people training for specific things like, hey, you need to achieve this thing because of my practical shooting competition perspective on things. And then you have people that have, you know, have had experience with, you know, CQB and things like that. It's like, hey, maybe you need to consider being able to do things this way because of my experiences. Like sometimes you have to do these things because, you know, whether it's fatigue or, you know, the type of equipment you have to wear. Or whatever the case may be, it's like there's just different things that you have to consider, and there's always there's a good balance between them, right? Like we want to be really good at hard skills, but we want to have experience and things like that. So I try to communicate those things, you know, with that balance in mind. It's like, yeah, we want to be extremely proficient, but we also have to understand like experience is definitely input the things that we're trying to teach for sure.
Yeah, and you see too, I think, and it part of it's like an emulation thing, and you know, probably part of partially respect. Like people will, I think, put maybe an undue amount of, I guess I'll say respect on certain products and things because they were used during the war on terror, right? You know, so like we were talking a little bit off air before we hit record, right? The ACOG, like I am not a fan personally. I do not like the ACOG, or like the PEC-15. Great laser unit, great laser. If you get a real PEC-15 that, you know, civilians aren't supposed to have, decent illuminator. Probably not the best material for a housing mounting solution is, you know, could use some improvement, right? And we have, like, we've got better options out there and stuff, but people will still say that's the best thing you should get because that's what was used for 15 years or 10 years or however long it was. And it's like, well, but what about other options? What about the raid? Like, what about the mall? What about, I mean, if you could get like an, you know what I mean? Like other options and stuff. And people, I think they just lack the understanding of how to use some of those tools. Truly, like the depth of understanding is just not there. They see that it was used by the military or certain high level units, and then it gets a free ride. Like no, like full send. This thing can never do any wrong because then it would break my heart and my perception of, this like idol that I have built in my mind. And I'm not trying to like give people shit, but I am trying to point out like you should understand the limitations. And in a lot of cases, and I'm sure you did too when you were serving, right? You probably would have picked different gear if you actually had a choice on some things.
Yeah, it actually it kind of goes both ways in a sense. So first and foremost, like we have there's high level skilled individuals who don't have experience. They definitely have a valid and valuable input into the equipment that is getting that type of experience, right? So like the considerations when developing the Tech 15, for example, they had different priorities in mind than I need this to be the most like high speed type laser module. So like they wanted it to fit around a front sight post well, be lightweight, and not come off the gun because they didn't want it to get lost. That means, in some instances, obviously it was designed a long time ago, but maybe button activation on it isn't the best, right? There's more ergonomic means, like the new Steiner Atlas, for example. So that the Steiner Atlas is probably developed by people who considered ergonomics more than they considered, I want this thing to be, I need this thing to fit around a front sight post, right? So there's a good a balance there. So when I was in the, when I was, like you said, when I was in, there's always like, hey man, this stuff sucks. I wish I had, something different. I said that about the NT4 night suppressor. Now I think it's one of the best suppressors ever because it's durable and incredible. I said that about the guns that were issued, like the Mark 18, and our DDM4, basically the SOCOM 14.5s. And now I'm like, yeah, it's hard to beat those, like the gold standard of that. Yes, they're overgassed, but you know what? They're going to work and they're going to be accurate. I said it about the night vision we had. I said it about Opsport helmets. And now it's like, I'm buying the kit that I had because I've like tried so many different things that just come full circle. And I'm just like, you know what? Cry Precision, Opsport, they have it figured out. Like there's certain things that for me that I prioritize and design cues that those things work out for me. But yeah, it definitely goes both ways, which I find pretty interesting. Like I'm not buying Tech 15s. I'm buying, more ergonomically considerate devices like the Maul and the Raid. I'm definitely going to be getting one of the Steiner Atlases, for example. And then, but there are things like like flashlights, like the Insight light. That's a big, bulky, outdated light, but the button activation on it's incredible. You just double tap and you have a constant on light. That should be a thing with all flashlights. I don't want to have to like mash another button, for example. So it's like one of those things. Like, oh man, sometimes I do want to spend $800 on one of these cloner lights just so I have that activation capability. But yeah, it goes both ways, basically.
Have you had a chance to use that the Steiner Atlas? Because I've only seen pictures. It looks uglier than sin, but maybe that's because the ergonomics was the leading choice behind it and not appearances. 'Cause I think the new, I don't know what it's called, the new BE Myers laser, I think, is kind of ugly looking too. But again, I've not gotten any end like user time with either device.
I've got hands on both of them. I haven't used them yet. Some of the guys I work with, while I was on paternal leave, did a night vision event with Nocturnality, and he had one there.
Oh, nice.
And Scott from Nocturnality says it's the laser right now, as long as it like holds up with durability, based on what he wants, right? Like he wants onboard activation. I'm the same way. I don't like cables on guns. And he's like, yeah, this is it. So yeah, I think we have one on order, like from Steiner, just waiting for it to get here. But it seems like they released a bunch that aren't done, like they're not like actual production models, which is kind of interesting. That's speculation right now, so we'll see. But it's super promising.
Is I find it funny too, like you said that about the cables. Like I used to be so married to the idea of I needed a dual pressure pad for every gun. And then I just recently, in the last like 3 weeks or so, I got away from it. Like here, I'll take this off. I'll put a I reverse mounted Unity the 45 the Axon, the 45 degree button just for my white light, and then went to just the straight fire button on the laser. And I actually like it a lot more than I thought I was going to. Like getting rid of the cable management, I think Surefire stuff's usually pretty damn good. But I have heard stories about their pressure pads having some issues after time. And like, oh, well, if you route your cables a certain way, it puts stress on them and they wear out. And it's like, well, how else am I supposed to manage this? I don't have, endless amounts of money to just spend on pressure pads and stuff. So like, maybe I just eliminate from the equation altogether. And I've actually found that I do enjoy it more. And that's just from time usage, trying new things, being open to the concept. It doesn't look as cool, maybe, but functionally, I think it's way better.
Yeah, I've been able to tell people's experience level with
Their rifle setups
pretty quickly based on
got something coming up on.
I've been able to tell people's experience levels pretty easily based on their consideration of ergonomics. It's easy to have a gun that's like flat range ready, I guess. It's easy to have a gun that I can come up and shoot for a couple seconds, put down and rest. But it's a lot more difficult to actually have a thoughtful setup behind a rifle with considering like, hey, I may need to like mash this button for 10 minutes straight or consistently have my gun shouldered for a long period of time. Now, I know some people are like, oh, it doesn't matter. You just manhandle the gun. I just have never actually encountered someone in a training scenario that would say that. Everyone is magwelling and chicken winging rifles when we get to the last room in the house when it's a long period of time, right? It just ends up what's happening because we are humans holding something out for a long period of time, whether it's a piece of paper or a rifle, is fatiguing, right? It is what it is. Another thing with like for example, cables, I was all into cables as well. But the number one problem was, especially when you're doing green side stuff, when you're going through tree lines, which is a majority of the stuff that we were doing, cables never survived. Like they were always getting ripped off. So we never ran battery packs on our helmets if we could help it. We just try to keep everything as streamlined as possible because that stuff would just eventually fail. And onboard activation is just typically more reliable. So for me, that's why I'm a big fan of the Mall. I know there's like it's kind of heavy. It hangs off the side of the gun, but the activation on it is tremendous. And if you have it, put on your rifle in an appropriate location, it's not hanging off the front of the gun where it's exposed. It's actually a pretty durable laser module as well. So same thing with lights. If I can have, the little click cap or the tail cap from Surefire that has a button and I have a pressure pad, I'm going to avoid Surefire pressure pads because, like you said, like they do fail like consistently. And if you don't have a tactile click with your button, that can get really fatiguing because you're going to mash it harder than you think you need to. So yeah, there's a lot of things like that. You can just look at someone's gun. It's like, hey, that may work for you when you're going out and dry firing, or you're doing your 2 hour range session and you're only holding the gun up for a total of 3 minutes over the 2 hours. But if you actually need to use that, like just think about, can I, if someone breaks in my house, can I hold my gun up and keep a white light activated on them until police arrives if I need to? That's a good way to consider, like, if your gun's actually ergonomically set up appropriately.
That's a good thought. Yeah, because I think more often than not, we consider and I think this was in the video that I watched with you recently too. I feel like you said last room in the structure, or I think you said like the sixth floor of the building you have to clear, whatever. That's a consideration physically. Like, are you going to be able to activate that white light? Are you going to be able to hold that position? Are you going to be able to, do the things you need to do? Muscle fatigue being real. And that's why, and I think you said it too, like everybody gets back to the magwell grip. You condense everything down and start using, your arms and elbows to try and prop everything up, because by the end of it, you're just completely smoked and you can only do what you can do. Everyone has a limitation. It's one of those things, like I have started to try to go out of my way to try some new things, like within reason. I don't have a huge budget, but like, okay, I'll try different pressure pads, or I'll try and move away from them, or just give it a couple of weeks shot. If you hate it, you can always go back, right?
That's a cool thing about the clicky caps on Surefire lights, if they come with the light. So if you get a pressure pad, you don't like it, just go back to what the light came with. It. But yeah, and that reel you're talking about, it's really considering like how can I use just like bone structure in my hand, and I don't want to talk about like all of this like nerd stuff because it's really not that complicated. It's just like how do I make this gun? How can I activate this stuff with the least amount of effort as possible? Because that's what's going to help me keep the gun up longer. I get it. You see these reels on Instagram of people like burning through houses in 2.5 minutes and all of this stuff, but it's like that's not realistic to at least what I've experienced. There are times where that happens, but there's a lot more times where it's like, hey, I'm like holding a gun up, holding security while someone else is doing something else for a long period of time. And if I have to, illuminate something for that long and I have to like death grip my gun to activate that white light, that's gonna suck. Like, I don't know what else to say. It's just like consider those things. You have those things on your gun to be able to use them, not for them to look cool. So.
Yeah, I mean, and it's funny. We went, I don't know, 3, 4 weekends ago, whatever. We were in Pennsylvania, spent a day and a half at Ben Franklin Range doing a like CQB like private course. And I brought my brother out with me, and he built a 14 and a half inch. Well, it was an M&P Sport too. He swapped out the barrel. He got a new handguard, but he got the really good looking but super beefy Geissele handguard. I forget what the hell model number it is. Within like the first 2 hours of the day, you watched that left elbow collapse down, and you saw everything you just mentioned. It's like, that's great if you're using that gun on a bipod and you're just laying down and shooting and you don't have to carry it around or anything. But that thing is a absolute tank, and I'm actually really glad I didn't like that was what I wanted for my gun, and I got something different. I got the Mark 16, I think, and way lighter. Way lighter M-Lock rail, not nearly as beefy and heavy. And as soon as I picked that thing up the first time, I'm like, yeah, this would suck. I do not like this at all. It looks good, and that's it.
And we all have different considerations with this stuff, right? So, I mean, there's some people who are like, hey, I don't care to have a consideration about how long and for a prolonged activation of laser or light. I get it. Some people don't have a consideration for having a lightweight gun. Like, for example, my competition rifle has a slick carbon fiber handguard on it. My guns that I have that are for, real life stuff are quad rails. They're DDM4 rails, so they're very lightweight quad rails because I consider, like, hey, I want something that doesn't create a bunch of deflection with a laser. I want something that's going to maintain zero, but I want something that's lightweight. Like, I just trying to balance things. There's a lot more considerations of that gun versus my comp gun, where it's just like, hey, I just want the gun to be lightweight. I don't need to worry about anything else. I don't even care if the rail spins because there's nothing attached to it, right? So I do understand. And some people are like, I just want my gun to look cool. I'm like, okay, well, I think that's a waste of money. But if that's your primary consideration, at least you have it figured out.
I mean, it is really important. When you did the video a while back too, were you, I may not be one for one, it's pretty close. You clone the rifle that you used in Marsoc, and I think like you had the Pack 16 on there. Did you get people reaching out like asking for specifics so they could copy
Yeah,
it?
I mean, it used to happen a lot more often than it does now, but that gun, that was a pretty common setup actually. So again, you see things like on the professional side that are completely different than what we see on social media. It's I think they're like it's becoming, a little bit more blended, but at least, that was 10 years ago when well, about 10 years ago when I started at Marsoc, like no one cared about the gun industry. Like we had a job to do. No one, like half the guys on the team weren't gun guys. I had just all different sorts of types of people. Most people, when they came back and they got out, they didn't care to own guns. They just didn't care about the stuff. They just used stuff that worked, long story short. And they didn't care how it looked. So like you had a flashlight in front of a laser, and then you would have like the pressure pad for some people on the bottom of the gun because that's where their activation fingers were. There's two buttons. They had two fingers down there. It makes sense. And it worked. And it wasn't super fatiguing. Yeah. I made that video all for the purpose. It's like, hey, this looks different than what people typically see. And people are like, wow, that is so interesting. It's like, it's actually the same thing. It's just like, it's just used it intentionally.
And I did. What did you think of that? The PEG 16, like, has the white light built in and everything. Like, because
Oh,
I
you don't
see,
use the white light. Yeah, it's so garbage. It's the cool thing about it with that setup is that pushes the laser up higher, so you can put a flashlight in front of it on the side of the gun. The white light doesn't matter, and then the laser will actually outshoot the light. Well, the Viz laser will hit the light, but the IR and the IR flood don't hit it, which is pretty cool. So you have to take the light off to zero the laser if you want to do it during the day, because you don't care about the Viz laser. You put it back on, and then you're good with your IR. It's pretty
That's
cool.
it, and you see it more now. People are like, oh, you have this all-in-one laser unit, and I think it's the dumbest shit ever. I'm like, because the light is almost never good. And I think I posted a reel to YouTube just talking about like my first thoughts, because I just got a Raid XE, which is by far the coolest laser I've ever used, which is out of to all of like four. I've not used a ton, but I'm like, this thing is the cat's ass. Like, it's amazing. I love it, whatever. And I had somebody comment like, well, you could buy 10 of these. I think it's like the HXFC laser that's got, the white light built in and everything. I'm just like, yeah. And they said that it performed better. And I'm like, I don't believe that for 1 second. And I just hate the appearance of having the white light built in there. It doesn't ever make sense to me. And I'm sure that's why everybody tried it, is because like, hey, look, the PEC 16 has it. We should try it and copy that design. We'll put everything in one package. I think it's
Yeah.
dumb. There's a reason
Yeah.
more people don't do it.
I feel like in the year almost 2026 now that it should be doable. Like you should have like a mod light and like a B. Meyer's capable laser in the same module. Like I feel like I know in the gun industry we're behind the curve on everything. Like business intelligence is terrible, marketing is terrible. Like our design, everything is just so is like 10, 15 years behind everyone else, right? But I mean, this is simple. Like I feel like it can't be that hard. Obviously, I can't figure it out because I'm not into that stuff. But it, like, I don't know. The PEC 16 was invented, I don't know, over 20 years ago. There's no way in 20 years you're telling me we can't improve it enough to have a high candela light and a pixel-based IR illuminator. Like, I don't believe it. I don't buy it for a second. It's just, yeah.
Well, because I think you see a lot of these small companies pop up and stuff, and then the money always seems to go places it shouldn't. Whereas with other industries, I just feel like it's more structured, or they're able to do more because it's less scrutinized. You know, the gun industry is always under fire for some reason or another. I mean, how we just got that the post today or yesterday, that whole like Glock's discontinuing everything and coming out with these new models that are non, for whatever reason, non-MOS. And like, I love Glocks, but like, why would you guys in 2026 bring anything to market that isn't optics ready? Like, why would you do that?
Yeah, that's this not to like jump down a weird tangent, but if those guns come out and there's issues, it's going to kill the Glock name. Like Glock's done. Like it's
Why
because they're hyping it.
has there been issues with another brand and handguns that don't do things the way they're supposed to that has potentially ruined a legacy brand on the market?
Not that I can think of, you know?
Yeah,
Can't think of one.
they would never let that stay on the market if it were dangerous to carry in a holster. But it would, you know, yeah, I think it would. If there's any issues, and I know, and that's the scary part too, kind of, is it's like, oh, we're changing this, so you can't put a switch in it. So you're taking the Glock reliability and you're fucking with it to try and avoid this one little thing that only, you know, retarded gangbangers want to put in their gun anyway. So, yeah.
This is going to start off by sounding like an unpopular opinion.
Oh, boy.
So just bear with me for a second, but I understand why they did it. It's I don't think it's out of a fear of the lawsuits. I don't think I know that's what everyone's knee-jerk reaction is like, oh, they just, you know, Glocks, you know, whoever the owner was, I forgot his name. I don't mean to sound rude or insensitive, but his wife that owns Glock, I forget their names. She just doesn't care. She's just, you know, doing whatever. She's just trying to take the easy road out of this. I don't think that's the case. I think it's like the lawsuits that have been stacking up because of this are draining the company, and this is probably the most cost-effective way out of it. And it's like, hey, it's either we go out of business trying to fight this, or we take the risk and hopefully we make a product that's just as good and we avoid this drain of money. Because that's the strategy that these people that sue like Daniel Defense and Glock they use. They don't care to win; they just care to drain your resources. I think that's what's Glock is probably trying to avoid, which I totally understand, and it's smart. Like, hey, you know what? If you can shift gears, make something just as good or better, do it, right? And obviously, that could be frustrating for the customer. It's a time investment. It's gonna have to, you know, rebuild trust if they do come out with something different. I think the V model is why they're doing that. I think it's gonna be so similar that we're not gonna notice much of a difference. And then, you know, Gen 6 is gonna be the FCU and everything else that will be a drastically different Glock, unless they have to change that too. But I'm hoping that we get some insight on the V model because there's Glock force reset triggers out there, or force reset mods that you can do for your like an OEM Glock trigger. And I would just find it hilarious if those things still work in like the new V models. That would be so funny to me because they're like $50 and you just drop them in. You don't even have to modify anything.
And it's the legal way around the same thing that people are trying to get out of the Glock switch. But yeah, I mean, and that actually would be really funny because I didn't realize that they had the FRTs for them.
Yeah, they've been out for like 6 months or so. And I've been seeing a couple of reels and I was like, oh, that's probably fake. And then I Googled it and it's like in stock, $50, multiple companies making them. I'm like, wow.
It's kind of weird too because like they're the most some of the most nonsensical things that people should ever spend money on in terms of being a proficient firearms owner and shooter. Like, is it fun? Yes. Do I believe you have the right to have it? Yeah. But like, it's just like bump stocks. Like, was I upset that they banned them? Like, personally, no, because I think it was stupid. But then at the same time, like, well, it's an infringement. I get that. And I'm not saying that we should be okay with them doing those things, but I was like, the people that were so upset about it, they're like, well, I voted for Trump, but like F this guy because he just pushed through a firearms ban. He's a Republican president. And it's like, well, yeah, I mean, to appease some people, and I'm not trying to justify it, but I'm like, are you really even going to feel that change? Like, it's a bump stock. Like, go figure out other stuff to do with your time, man. Like, stop wasting ammo into a pile of garbage. I don't know. It's just one of those things where I'm like, I don't see the value in it personally. Yes, you have a right to it. I'm not saying you don't. I'm just saying I don't know that I see the value in it personally.
I understand. I understand for sure. I think this. We're getting down the tangent a little bit, which is fine. But I think this could set a pretty dangerous precedent because you see a gun that's able to take a modification easily. So they're banning the gun. What's next? FRT triggers and ARs, right? I think that's the next natural thing. It's like, oh, this AR can take a easily modifiable object easily and turning it into something that, is basically a machine gun, right? It's not by definition, but I can see it's like now, guess what? AR-15 manufacturers are going to get sued until they change the design that can't accept a force reset trigger or something like that. That's what I worry is the next thing.
Yeah, the frivolous lawsuits are, I mean, that's what I think people in this community, they get upset about. They don't understand like the cost that goes into that, the time that goes into that. And those are like the two biggest resources for any small business, right? Is money and time. So that's why a lot of these companies like, oh, why don't they develop a better product? Well, because they're spending a lot of their resources fighting lawsuits. They can't afford to do all this R&D and testing because they have to fight lawsuits. And if you want these brands to stick around, unfortunately, like these lawsuits have to go away. So you're asking the wrong questions. Like instead of blaming the company, maybe look in the mirror and go, well, what could I do to help sway popular opinion that guns aren't the problem here? And it's not the more convenient answer, it's the more frustrating one, but it would solve the problem in both cases. People just don't. I feel like in our community, we have a lot of people who have some very strong opinions within the community, and when they leave that community, they clam up. They won't have the hard conversation. They won't say the uncomfortable thing. They won't risk their own brand reputation of taking like the stand against some of that stuff. And it's unfortunate because I think we have a lot of people that actually do care about this stuff, but they're afraid of the backlash. And I think that's the first problem.
Yeah, that is a very common theme. You could probably consider it a principle, although it's a principle you don't want to follow, is fear of backlash, right? I mean, that is, again, not to get into another tangent, but in the gun space has this weird like Christianized area, right? Where there's a ton of people that are like, I'm a Christian. And everyone likes when someone says they believe in God. That's cool. But as soon as you define what that means, people hate you. So you see people that are really scared to be bold for what they actually believe. And it's not even like trying to prove people wrong or even trying to be an apologetic. It's just like, hey, I'm going to provide information about this because I think this is what's right. And I'm not going to try and prove that you're wrong. It's just, putting information out there. But people are afraid to do that because they're afraid of backlash. They're afraid of losing followers. So they, at the end of the day, they value man's praise and they value follower counts more than what actually matters. So in this sense, like, hey, there's a fundamental right here that we should have that should not be infringed on. And we're too worried about, losing a friend or a neighbor's, like how much our neighbor likes us because we want to ask them how they feel about the situation or whatever the case may be. It's pretty pathetic. And I get it. We, at, like, in all of our hearts, we're all cowards to some extent, right? We all have, like, that desire to flee something uncomfortable. And for some of us, that is hard conversations. I get it. But at the same time, we have to be willing to step up and, at least in whatever capacity we are, some of us, maybe some people, maybe that capacity they're better at doing online through video. Sometimes it's confrontational with other people, but find a way to be bold, right? There's so many avenues to do it nowadays. Figure out what works for you. And, if there's a way that doesn't work for you, avoid it and put your energy into what does work for you. But there's no excuse for anyone to completely avoid that sort of thing.
Well, I mean, yeah, if it's uncomfortable, I mean, it's uncomfortable. You're only going to do so much to mitigate that before you just give up and don't do that. Like, and that's anything. Like, we talked about at the beginning of our conversation, right? Like, kind of goes hand in hand with the prioritization of time and you know what's what really is important to you. Physical fitness, right? Is it going to be super comfortable? Probably not. If it's a drastic change to your lifestyle, if it's a drastic change to you've never if you're an individual who never played sports, right? You're not used to exerting yourself. You're not used to, back pain and aches and things like that because you just never had a job where you're on your feet all day or you know what I mean? Any of that stuff. Like change is uncomfortable and you have to be willing to put yourself, I think, in a certain state of discomfort to get the things that you want to get with anything,
Yeah,
like
absolutely.
learning a new job. Hey, I want a job that pays better so I can do more for my family or so I can. Even if you're super selfish, like I'm not hating on it. You want to go buy your dual tube night vision because night vision's awesome and you got to get a better paying gig. And it sucks. It's uncomfortable learning new skills. It's uncomfortable. Change is not everyone's favorite thing. It's nobody's favorite thing, but like you have to embrace it if you expect something different or something better of yourself and your situation. So to that point, like that's what frustrates me so much is you have people that within the comfort of this community share, that's what I was saying, like some very strong opinions on stuff. But then if you put them out of that context, like they're absolutely worthless. They're absolutely worthless. They'll not, take the hard stand. They have no spine about stuff. And then they'll just back the popular opinion because, like you said, to some degree, they're a coward.
I think a lot of people understand this, but it's important to understand that in every aspect of life, whether it's your intelligence, whether it's your fitness, whether it's your job, your shooting, the only way to and see positive change is through discomfort. You have to experience discomfort. Now, very rare cases, you will very much enjoy that refining process. Some people, for example, like studying, you will very much enjoy your reading. Right. I understand that there's some nuance there, but for the most part, positive change requires discomfort. And in the sense that what we're talking about here, that change is not even a change about you or me. It's a change about the community. And you have to experience, we all have to experience discomfort for better positive change of the community. So again, not only is it like cowardice, like I'm afraid to do that, but it's also selfishness because it's like I'm not willing to put myself or I'm not willing to put other people before me. I'd rather just be comfort and or comfortable. And this culture that we have is so just hyper focused on numbing ourselves, right? Being in entertainment and just getting by because we have so many things that we're responsible for. And this is the case for everyone that we, when we do have the free time, we want to just numb ourselves with watching football or watching some meaningless TV show that doesn't do anything but pass the time. And I get it, but it's like a fight with yourself that you have to constantly fight against. It's like if it's
I feel
not,
so attacked right now
I
because
mean,
I watched the Lions beat the shit out of the Buccaneers last night, and I loved every minute of it.
I watched that game too. That was a good game. But I was also really depending on one of the players for my fantasy team. So there's that. So there's some importance there.
Who
But
was it? Did they do it?
so I was playing Baker and I was playing against Baker and
Oh, perfect.
I had the Detroit kicker. So it's funny, I'm last place in my fantasy team. I had first overall pick. And I was playing first place, was undefeated, and I beat him because it was a good week. But
There
anyways,
you go. Yeah, man.
so yeah, being uncomfortable, it's essential. Like that's actually like every time I come into the gym, especially with like training in the mornings and a lot of the time, it's like, man, I just feel like it requires so much effort to do anything. Like I'm just either just fatigued and my brain's just not woken up yet, whatever the case may be. But it's like if I am not uncomfortable, I have done nothing and I wasted my time. So that's what I shoot for. That's my training goal. It's like get uncomfortable doing this thing, get uncomfortable with this sort of stimulus, whether it's, like, hey, I'm doing zone two, zone three development. I need to be uncomfortable while I'm doing that. I'm doing strength. I need to be uncomfortable under the load I'm in. It's just, uncomfortability. That's a
Or
very important
even
thing.
for some folks, it's a mental or emotional thing. Like a great example, and this is like it's my brother, so this isn't supposed to be a dig. If it comes across that way, it's not the intent. He had never been to a firearms training course. He'd been shooting the last maybe 10 years, as long as I have. Honestly, he was the reason I bought a gun. Like we moved out together, he bought a house, right? I moved out with him. He went out and bought a Glock 43, and I was like, shit, dude, I want a gun. And then here we are. years down the road. He'd never been to a formalized training course, so I took him to an Orion Training Group class when they were here in Michigan in May, and he was like super anxious about it. He thought I brought him there to embarrass him in front of people. I was like, dude, no, that's not why. Why so I can hear you bitch about it later? No, that why would I want to do that? No, man, this is to help you learn, you know? So be, come in here. It's gonna be uncomfortable. You're not gonna know any like hardly anybody else in this class. You're not gonna know anything about structure clearance. You're not gonna know any of what these words or concepts mean. Like, put yourself out there. Like, physically, he was fine. Physically, he did everything that was asked of him in the course. He didn't struggle with any of it. But like for a lot of people, if you're especially if you're introverted, and unfortunately in 2025, where a lot of us, not him specifically, but people like we spend so much time on screens, face-to-face interaction is not always what people want. Put yourself in that situation. You will grow, whether it's physically, like you were saying, right, with fitness, or just as an individual, where you put yourself in that situation to overcome something. That small amount of resiliency is a starting point, and it grows to better things.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing to think about. I had to think about it for a second with the emotional side of things. Because that's one I don't know if I can really relate to all that much. I can relate to like the uncomfortableness with confrontation and things. I used to be a very confrontational person. Like I longed for it. I longed for conflict, like face to face. And that's really changed. I've like become an opposite person. It's not that I avoid it now. It's just I don't get energy from it. Like I used to get energy from conflict, and now it's like I just feel like I have so much other stuff going on, and I just don't really see like myself being as the most convincing person out there to try and convince someone of whatever they're doing, right? I just there's something I'm effective at it, and I think I'm just like a more peaceful person overall. But the emotional side of things, yeah, it's and I think it's interesting in the gun side of things because we see this as like a masculine skill that everyone should just inherently know how to do, right? Like as men, we should be able to shoot guns. Like as men, we should be able to bench 225 or whatever. It's like if I can't do that, and I know that about myself, I don't want to show that to other people, which is not the case. Like it's just guns. Like honestly, they're just toys, kind of. I mean,
I mean,
obviously, they have very significant purposes,
I
but.
waited years before I finally, our range only goes out to 200, the club that I'm a member at. So they have a lot of like 25 to 50 to 70 yard bays, and then they have a 100 yard range and a 200 yard range, which can open up to 600. But I did like the whole first year I was there, I'm like, I don't want to shoot 200. And my friend's like, dude, why? We'll go do it. It's not a big deal. I'm like, no, you know, I really don't like, I had never done it. So I was like, I don't want to do it. What if I fucking suck at this? What if I can't do it? And I mean, really, what's to be afraid of? Like, you miss, then we'll help you not miss. Like, if your optic is zeroed and you understand the science behind zeroing, there's literally nothing to be afraid of, because the same target you hit at 50, you will hit at 200 if you did your work correctly. And
Yeah,
lo and behold,
it all
there
comes
it
down.
is.
Yeah, it comes down to a pride and ego problem, right? We don't want our pride to be diminished, and we don't want our ego to be attacked. And anytime that we like do something that we're not good at in front of other people, that we feel like we're like breaking ourselves down. When it's actually the opposite. Like when we are able to express humility, it builds ourselves. Like we're developing character in a very positive way, versus rather than doing something negative to ourselves. But that's a difficult one for people to understand. It's a very strong Christian concept that is a fundamental pillar of Christian behavior is expressing humility, knowing that that is a fundamental to building Christian character versus avoiding things to protect an ego and pride, which you shouldn't have. So, but.
See, I didn't know that. Now, I'm still working. I'm beginning stages of my journey with that, but I did not realize I was. I mean, it makes sense when you say it. It's one of those things where you're like, oh yeah, of course. But the humility is a building block or a foundational element.
I've been studying, man, I don't really have to put this well. So it's a topic of sin, it's kind of an anthropology. So it's a study of man and study of sin. But what I've really been focusing on is Christian behavior in general. And I've realized through that, and it's very basic stuff. And it's basic, but a lot of people just don't get it. They're not able to pull these things out of, whatever they're studying, if they're studying at all. But I realized like how I don't know how to say this nicely, so I'm not going to attempt it. Christian, like illiterate Christians are in their own beliefs. Right. You see the most basic fundamentals of Christian behavior being contradicted by people online all the time. I deal like, especially with the situation going on. Like, I see people say things and do things, and I go on their bio and they have a verse or
Oh,
something.
yeah.
And I'm like, man, like, you have no idea how basic of a doctrine you have contradicted with, hiding behind this Instagram account and saying the thing that you're saying. It's mind-boggling. But essentially, and I've actually been considering this quite a bit with competition, right? I've been like, is competition something a Christian should do? And there is a good argument for it. I'm not sold by it, but we're always to put someone else first, right? That's a principle. We should always express humility and put other people first. So if you are, for example, in this situation, trying to protect your own ego and pride, you're putting yourself first, right? You're putting yourself before anyone else. Christians can never do that. You always have to put other people first. You have to self-sacrifice. This is what bearing your cross means. It means another way to think about it is like you had the sacrificial system of the Old Testament, right? Where you had to sacrifice things to atone for sins and other things. And the New Testament, your sacrifice is yourself. What does that actually mean? Chiefly, it means praise and it essentially means praise and prayer to God. That's a way to offer yourself as a sacrifice to God, but it also means denying yourself. So, and it can be the simplest of things, right? So if like, let's just say you're married and your wife needs help with the dishes, instead of choosing yourself to sit on the couch and watch football, you deny yourself to go help with dishes. That's a holy sacrifice that you just made because you just sacrificed what you wanted for someone else. And we talked about it with competition. Your whole point of competition is beating other people, putting yourself above other people. Now, you can do that in a way that is very much righteous and good and brings glory to God and all of these things. But it's one of those areas where it's so tempting to be selfish and so tempting to put yourself above other people and tear other people down. It's like, should you just avoid it? Right. This is something that I'm, contemplating recently. It's like, I just don't know if I'm bringing fruit to the kingdom by doing this. Right.
Yeah.
I just don't. I can bring fruit to the kingdom by training people in skills like what you train people for. We want to be better than each other. And through that competition, we are improving each other. But the whole intent is to better people. But if I'm going out in a solo event against people that, are very much just acquaintances and my whole intent is to beat them to prove that I'm better, how is that Christ-like? Even if I'm like, oh, all glory to God. Thank you, God, for giving me this healthy body to do this thing. Again, it's still very much about me. You know what I mean? So
Yeah.
humility and self-sacrifice, very fundamental to Christian behavior.
That is gonna rattle around my head for like at least the rest of the evening. Like really, that's I appreciate you sharing that. That's extremely relevant in so many ways, especially in this community with like I don't know, it's just we're very stuff driven and as like and I get it and I love it, but then at the same time I'm like, should we really be? It's interesting.
The more so I'm reading, I'm listening. So I read and listen to books. I'm usually doing one or two of each. Listening has been pretty recent, but I've been really like opposed to listening to literature, but I've tried it. And I'm like, actually, this is pretty good. But I'm listening to a book and it speaks to understanding the holiness of God. If you've read the book, I'm not even gonna name the title of the book. If you've read it, it's very popular, you're gonna catch on to what I'm saying. For the people that are listening. But what it teaches you, or what the book points out, is that the more you learn about how holy God is, the more you realize how much you suck, basically, how much you're totally depraved, because there's such a distance there. And the little that you know about God, you assume you know this much about yourself. But what you see is the more you learn, the more God goes in this direction that just separates himself from you. This is called transcendence, right? He's that much higher, that much more righteous, much more just, merciful, all of these things. And when you learn more about it, you realize like it's infinite, right? And you're so finite. And that is so like humbling. It's ridiculous. And it just puts so much of your life in perspective of what actually matters and who you're actually doing things for. Like, why am I doing anything that's finite for a finite person like myself? It doesn't make sense, right? We're just dust. We're just gonna be in a blink of an eye, we're gonna be gone one day. I could die tomorrow. And this gym, for example, all of the effort I put in here meant nothing. Right, it advanced the kingdom in no sense. Right, so it's difficult. But the more that you learn, there's so many like prongs to it. Because like the more you learn about his holiness, the more you want to tell people about it, and the more you tell people about him, the more people see you as a hypocrite. Because guess what? You're a sinner and you're telling people about a righteous, holy God. It just doesn't make sense. But the scriptures tell us Christ came not to save the righteous, but to save sinners. And guess what? The people who are saved are the ones who are telling about God, and those are sinners. So that should be encouragement to be bold in the faith, even if you are a wretched sinner like myself. It's intended to be that way. It's intended for you to express humility, to point to someone else who is so much better than you are.
And
Sorry, that was a slight
hopefully,
tangent.
no, but I mean, hopefully it resonates with folks. I mean, a little bit, I think a little bit of humility goes a long way. I do. I mean, it starts small, and I think it's a gateway to, I don't know, to individual growth. You don't have to be perfect. I think this community, speaking of the gun community specifically, could use more of it. Because it's as much as a lot of people like to say, like, oh yeah, we're here for the community. We just want to do this for the community. That's our mission. And then their actions speak contrary to that quite often, which is in a lot of ways to be expected, just based off of what we've seen, right? Past experiences and all that. But it's I lost my train of thought. I don't know. I was thinking, I said that, and the image of a very specific individual came to mind, and then I just blanked. I was like, all right, well, now my brain went a totally different direction. Which is, it's fine. But
I mean, with like all the drama that's been going on, there's been so much like reflection on things in life in general. It's just like, because one thing I've never experienced, like I said, I've experienced like controversy before, or crazy things happen that are unexpected, right? That I've been involved in, but never to the scale of like millions of people knowing about it, right? It's pretty drastic. And what you get through that is a lot of opinions. You get a lot of people saying different things, and it makes you think about, perception quite a bit. It makes you think about like, oh wow. And not just related to what's going on, but to everything else you do. It's like, how is this being perceived? And for me, it really made me consider, not because I did anything wrong. I was not involved in any of the drama technically, right? It had nothing to do with me. I'm not an owner or a brother. But what made me realize is how important ensuring that like your Christian behavior is proper, especially on a platform. And it's not to try and prove that you're righteous or that you're better or anything else. It's because that you have a standard to uphold. There's something more important than yourself. So it's just everything you say and do has significance. And I've read some things that are kind of outside the canon of scripture, that or canon of Christianity, I should say, that really help drive that point even further with what's important, what's not. And like one of the analogies that I kind of stumbled upon that I thought was so good is that like when you do something and it affects another person, which is almost everything you say and do, it creates this ripple effect. And sometimes those ripples are like impacts on other people. Sometimes we don't ever know how far that ripple goes or how significant it is. It could be extremely, extremely bad on a person. So being that conscious of what you're trying to say and do is so important. You should never put yourself, again, to repeat myself, if you're ever trying to prove that you're better than someone, you're ever trying to prove that what you're saying is right over someone else, you're ever just trying to put yourself above someone else, that's going to create some very negative ripples with people. Whether you are right or better than someone else, it doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things. That's not what's important. What is important is ensuring that your interactions and your relationship with people are very good, right? Those things are going to last much longer than whatever, physical capability I've built in this gym, for example. Like I'm going to be, well, hopefully I'll be old and decrepit one day where it doesn't matter how much I deadlifted when I was 31 years old. And just like that stuff goes away. But what will matter is the relationships I have with people. Those are going to last, right? So,
The positive impacts you can create in the community, the people around you, that stuff will carry on for, well, a long time usually. That's why it's important to acknowledge that. And things like they had a speaker when I was in school, guy came in. I remember two things from it. He picked up a fucking like 8-foot broadsword and swung it around in the gym and talked about how I think it was an anti-bullying thing, like words pierce like a sword. But that's the kind of stuff everyone remembers, like stuff that was said to them, good or bad. So certain things will stick with you forever. So what you do, what you say, it does. It makes a difference. it matters, and it will continue to matter for years and years and years down the road. So, be good, folks. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like people just need to stop thinking about themselves and stop thinking in materialistic terms. Like you said, like we are a very materialistic society. This industry is very materialistic. I mean, for a while, and I'm glad it's kind of shifting away from it, is people are just flexing, quote unquote, the stuff that they had. They were just bragging about the uniqueness and rareness or the expensiveness of the stuff that they had, and people were praising that. It's just like, just
Yeah.
think about that, how ridiculous that is. That doesn't. Who does that benefit? You know what I
Okay, but
mean?
I, you know what, but I really do not love the guys that go buy all of their gear at a garage sale and they're like, look at all this Alice webbing gear I got for like $5. I'm like, yeah. And there's a reason the guys in NAMM got rid of it. Like, it's not, there's a couple of things that people do that stuff and they're like, I'm just being ultra, it's not holistic, what frugal or whatever. I'm like the one of the things that sets me off, I hate it. And you will probably disagree. That's totally okay. It's like the guys who get slick plate carriers and put chest rigs over it, like it's some cheat code where they broke the matrix. I'm like, I hate that. I hate it.
Yeah, and if
It's
they're
irrational, but.
if they're bragging about it, they're doing the same thing, right? They're trying to draw attention to themselves, like, look what I've done that's better, or look what I have that's better, for whatever reason, whether it's because it's rare, it's expensive, or because it's super budget, right? It's the same thing. It's like people chasing the praise of man, which is so, it's so ridiculous. It's so silly.
But I never have the urge more to take the low road and have a stupid debate about how dumb it is than when I see that. It's just one of those things. I don't know why. I'm like, this is dumb. You're wearing a slick carrier with chasm buckles on it. Just clip the damn thing in. Like, what's the big deal? And you're like, no, dude, this is hella utilitarian. I'm like, I'm gonna hella kick you in the nuts. I hate this.
It's so funny.
But I know we're pushing time and starting to get to the silliness of things. So, I appreciate it, man. Like the conversation, tremendous. If folks have questions for, I mean, anything that we got into here, because I know we talked about everything from, the venerable PEC 16 to a lot of theological stuff and things like that. Where can people reach you?
So you find me on Instagram at reformed.wombat. That's my Instagram handle. I try to answer as many DMs as I can. I know on the previous podcast I said I do answer every DM that I get. I can't promise that anymore. Just the craziness of life. But that page is chiefly set up for helping people through spiritual stuff. So mainly explaining theology, but also helping people as simple as finding a church or even if we don't agree on a denomination, if you come to me and you're like, hey, I'm Roman Catholic, I'm not going to try and convince you otherwise. You're like, but I just can't find a church around me. I'll help you find a church. So I do all kinds of stuff, but mainly in the theology side of things.
And if they want a build list so they can clone your rifle.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I do answer your questions for sure. They
Perfect.
won't be prioritized, I'll be honest. But yeah, if people have questions about gear or recommendations on where to go to buy a gun, whatever the case may be, happy to help.
All good, man. All good. Appreciate the time. I know you're busy with the thing you said 2 week old and work and everything. So absolutely love it, man. Always happy to connect. And I'll be in touch. Maybe we'll do this again soon.
Yeah, sweet man. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, man. Well, we jumped all over the place in that one, but a fantastic discussion nonetheless. I went into it really wanting to, I mean, get into some of the shooting stuff, the training stuff. I think we did touch on a lot of that, just not in the way that I think conventionally a lot of people want to approach those subjects. And what I mean by that is like tangibly, like what can you do? What drills can you work on? What gear can you buy? What things are going to make you a better shooter, a better performer, a more capable individual, a more dangerous man, right? I think that that's the consumerism that's built into all of us, right? And I think instead we approached it from a very different lens while still in scope of the discussion, which was the time that you put in, how and where you prioritize your efforts for specific skill sets, why you prioritize one skill over another, things like that, because I think there's a lot to be said for understanding that this isn't a purely physical pursuit. There's a lot of it that is like, fitness, physical, being able to pull a trigger consistently, grip. All those things, right? Like they're physical, yes, in all of those regards, yes. But on the mental and even to a degree the spiritual, side of things. It has to be there. You know, those are things that I think hold a lot of people back. I personally have also struggled with a lot of that stuff. Man, it's something that you have to internalize. You have to sort of like, and I can only, you know, I'm saying this like you have to, but I think I'm just sharing what I've had to do to find the level of success that I've been able to reach, which is totally relative. You know, my level of success compared to somebody like Brandon or somebody else, like they may be very, very different. I think I've achieved and accomplished quite a bit. I would like to say those things. For me, you had to internalize it. You had to make the choice. You have to make the conscious decision. And I don't want to oversimplify it, but in a lot of cases, in a lot of instances, like, man, you got to just suck it the fuck up and bear down. And yes, I'm going to give up sleep. You know, I've had nights doing this podcast where I was done at 7, I think, 7 or 7:30 p.m., right? Done recording, ready to go. Edits are done by, you know, I got through like 8, 8:30, whatever. And I was not finished until midnight. Because something funky happened, and I'm going to knock on some wood right now because I never want to do this again. And I spent hours scouring forums on my phone, on the computer here, trying to figure out what the hell happened. What could have happened that was preventing me from completing the editing process and the export? And at the end of the day, it was a single stupid checkbox. And I found an article that was like 6 years old. And I went and found that setting. Checked that box. It was some update that, you know, the software pushed through, and I went and checked that box or unchecked it, whatever it was, and that solved it. So at 12 o'clock at night, I figured it out, and at 12:30 at night, I was finally done, got it, you know, everything staged and uploaded and ready to go for when I wanted that to ultimately drop. And that required me sacrificing several hours of sleep, you know, because I usually was going to bed around 10 o'clock or so. And yeah, so I lost 2.5 or 3 because, you know, you're kind of wound up. You're not going to go right to sleep. So 2.5 or 3 hours of sleep to get that done. Now, in one particular instance, and it's the same thing with if you want to go train night vision, right? You want to learn how to move, right? Shoot, move, communicate under night vision. Guess what? You can only do that when it's dark, you guys. And you could say, well, just wait till the fall and the winter when, you know, the sun goes down earlier. But the flip side to that is it's also hella freaking cold. So it's like, well, what are you going to do? Where are you going to find that sweet spot and that balance point? You're probably going to have to give up some sleep or sacrifice some stuff the next day so that you can sleep in and still get your 6 or 8 hours wherever you need to function. So we talked about a lot of that. I mean, we did talk about gear a little bit. We talked about, you know, some of the, a lot of the things really in this community that are, I think, very relevant. He shared his experiences in a lot of different ways and you know, tied it back to faith, man. And I think the more I grow and the further I get into this community, I think that that has to be such a huge part really of who you are. And it doesn't, and here's the thing, that doesn't need to outwardly be who you are. It doesn't have to be, if that's something you're not comfortable with, because your stage of your journey, much is the same as I am. You're not ready to be that outward person, that outward voice, right? But it has to be a part of you. You have to have that, I think. Otherwise, I think I would ask, you know, what are the motivations? What are the reasons that you do what you do? And ask if you can articulate that. And maybe you can, maybe you can't. You know, maybe a lot of this is selfish for some of us. And that's okay. We are human, you know. I kind of love that we got into that piece of it, if I'm being totally honest. It was a cool discussion. I hope you guys as listeners got a ton out of that. And if you did, right? If you loved that, like, A, I encourage you to reach out to Brandon and ask him whatever questions you guys have. Like, honestly, do that. Reach out to him. He's a great resource and a good man. But also, selfishly here, I'm going to ask you guys to go ahead and hit the subscribe button, because that stuff helps a ton, man. Like, trying to grow the presence, trying to get good messages, like what people like Brandon are sharing here through my medium, my platform, if you will. We talked about that this evening as well, right? You know, that's the kind of stuff it takes. I ask for the help. It's something I've gotten very comfortable with, is something I never used to ask for help before, and I have now. Maybe that's some of that humility shining through, being able to, you know, being willing to ask for help in certain instances, but also being strong enough to persevere when you don't always get it. And I don't want to pat myself on the back too hard here. But I think that's the kind of stuff you need if you want to find whatever success you're chasing. to whatever degree you're chasing it, you have to do those things. You have to exercise some of those behaviors. So I do hope you guys enjoyed the discussion. I do hope that you took some things away. Because it's ultimately, again, like I said, the beginning of this discussion, the beginning of this episode, why I do this is to help share my learning with all of you. As I learn, you learn. So that's all I have, though. That's it for this week's episode of The Prepared Mindset. Thank you guys so much for hanging out and listening. As always, hit the like button. Check us out on YouTube and Instagram. If you are so inclined in either platform, give us a like, subscribe, follow, all that stuff. Really, really helps us out tremendously. Till next time, though, that's all for me, you guys. Be safe out there. Enjoy the fall weather now that we're finally cooling down. And like I always say here, work hard, train smarter, and be prepared.